Good afternoon. This is Tanya Schultz with Social Chats Locals. I am live streaming with my co-host, Maria de Los Angeles. Hey, Maria, how are you?
I am great. How are you, Tanya?
Fantastic. You know what? I just finished walking my dogs. I'm all like happy and glowing, I feel, because the weather is beautiful. It's not hot. It's not cold. It's perfect. So,
oh, yeah. I want to go out and get a juice after we end the show. Sit under a tree and
meditate.
Ponder on life.
Well, we have a really cool guest today. I was doing some research on her, and she is a New York Times bestseller. She put out three books.
Yeah, she has. And the first one was called Surrender Wife, the second one was Surrender Single, and then the second one is, wait, I may have the order wrong, things will get as good as you can stand.
She wrote one, that's the Surrender Wife, she wrote in 2001. The Surrender Single, she wrote in 2002, and the things will get as good as you can stand, 2004. So the last one is... I want to check out that one. Things will get as good as you can stand. And you said you were reading the first one?
Well, this is exciting because I don't think we've ever had a New York Times bestseller on the show.
No, I don't think so.
We had Dina Ladan, which will hopefully soon be a New York Times bestseller.
And she's our hometown girl.
So I finished reading... Surrender Single last night. It's a very quick read. It's not a difficult book to get through, which is good. And it's all cut up in little snippets of information, so it's easy to digest. And she gives a lot of examples of successful situations or not so successful situations.
Well, what I'm impressed about with her is that she has also seminars for people.
Oh, hold on a second, Tanya. Okay. She's calling me.
Okay, cool.
Hold on.
And while you're doing that, I'm going to set up our social media so that people know we are on the air, live streaming right now. And there's a fan page for Laura Doyle. I'm looking it up for us. I don't know if anyone's tried Facebook lately, but it's, I don't know, they keep changing stuff around. It gets confusing. Here we go. So Laura Doyle is our guest today. Her first name is spelled Laura, last name is Doyle, and she is the best-selling author, relationship expert, and there's a fan page for her on Facebook. So,
Tanya?
Yes.
Sorry about that. She just forgot to call your number.
So oh, okay.
That's fine. So she'll be calling you shortly.
There we go. Hold on. Hi, Laura. This is Tanya.
Yes. Hello, Maria.
Hi, this is Tanya,
Laura,
too.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And that's Tanya, my co-host.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Tanya.
And we were already talking about the book, so we can just jump right in it.
Great. I'm glad to hear it.
Well, I finished reading it last night, and I really loved it. There was a lot for me to learn and digest, and... why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, just to begin with?
Sure. Well, the way I got started in this work is that I was married pretty young. I was 22 years old, and at first everything was great. I was crazy about him, and he was crazy about me, and we really just had a great relationship. And then as time went on, I started to think of little ways that I could help him improve. You know, I thought, well, I can help him dress better, and I can help him eat a little healthier, and I can help him do a little better at work. And so I started offering these quote unquote helpful suggestions. In wife language, they're helpful, but in any man's language, they're just critical and controlling. So he naturally became a little withdrawn, and he was watching a lot of TV, and we weren't spending a lot of time together. When we did, it was kind of tense because I was saying, he doesn't seem like he wants to spend any time with me, and, you know, I had a lot of complaints. And so it occurred to me that maybe I've married the wrong man and I needed to get a divorce. And we started going to, I drug us to couples counseling, and I was reading books, and I was trying to figure out how to not be divorced. I didn't really want to be divorced, but I was also pretty miserable about 4 years in. So the whole basis of this came out of trying to save my own marriage, getting a lot of information that wasn't helpful, trying that, finding out it just didn't work. And then finally settling in with the advice that I got from women who had long, happy marriages. And some of it seemed so contrary to me that I couldn't even wrap my brain around it. Like, I couldn't, I was like, you want me to do what? You know, I was like, well, you got any other ideas? Because I don't think I can do that. Like, one of them suggested, she said, well, all she said was what worked for her. She said, you know, I try never to criticize my husband, no matter how much it seems like he deserves it. I was like, whoa, my head was exploding. Like, what? It's crazy. I can't do that. And another woman said, oh, well, for us, it's been really great that my husband handles all the finances for the family. He pays all the bills, and I just deposit my paycheck in our joint account. He pays all the bills. That's been a tremendous relief. And that one seemed really terrifying to me. So I was like, well, you got any other suggestions? But little by little, all these suggestions did work for me to transform my marriages. Like, suddenly the man who had wooed me came back. He was going out of his way to do thoughtful things for me. He'd say, oh, I noticed your car was low on gas, so I filled it up for you. And then some of the more traditional things, he was showing up with flowers unexpectedly, and the passion was back, the sex life was improving. So I really felt like I was on to something, and I asked all my friends, you know, I kind of got all my friends on board. I was like, hey, you know, try this. You know, they complain about something with their husbands. I'd say, hey, try doing this. And they'd try it, and they'd call back and go, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. That worked. So we really felt like we had hit on something. And then I started having support groups, and I had workshops. And then somebody said, well, you know, I think my cousin in Florida would really like to know what we're doing. Can you write it down? And so I did, and I even went to my husband. I said, I think there must be like 2,000 women that would be interested in this information and finding out what we're doing. So we self-published a book called The Surrendered Wife. Wow. And it was later picked up by Simon & Schuster and became an international bestseller.
Wow.
And then as a prequel, I started working with women who were single, and the reason I did that is because I would hold workshops for wives, and I'd have all these single women enroll. And I remember saying to one, you realize this is a workshop for wives, right? And she said, yeah, I know. And I said, well, then what are you doing in it? And she said, I think if I learn this now, that's going to help me have the kind of relationship I've always wanted. And I knew she was right. So I started about workshops for singles, and then I wrote the book, The Surrendered Single, using the exact same principles, the idea that you can't control anyone besides yourself. You know, the term surrender to me is such a beautiful word because it's what we all have to do every day. We can't control the traffic, so we can either fume and try to weave and grip the steering wheel, or we can say, wow, this is great. I have time to talk on the phone or listen to music or listen to an audio book. That's surrender. It's acknowledging what is, being grateful for what is. So we found that surrendering was equally effective for singles in trying to attract and marry the man who is right for them.
And I think that the yogi in me could really relate to that because as I was reading this book, you know, it was really, it's just about being a nice person and being compassionate. And you have to surrender in all relationships in life sometimes. You know, even sometimes you just have to let go, even if it's someone at work who's annoying you or a family member that you have a contentious relationship with. I mean, surrender is in all aspects of our lives, not just in romance. So I saw a lot of yogic teachings in here, indirectly.
Well, you're absolutely right, Maria. That's actually been a really amazing but unexpected fringe benefit to doing this work, is we find it actually changes everything. Not just our romantic relationships are transformed, but our work relationships, you know, how we interact with coworkers, how you respond to your mother, you know, is affected. When you develop surrender muscles, I call them, you get into the habit of staying on your side of the street, keeping your side of the street clean, and relinquishing what the other person is doing. It really is a very transformative in all areas.
Laura, do you find it could be maybe because of the, you were surrendering, letting go of your ego, your own internal ego, like accepting what, you know, in a relationship, you know, I was just telling Maria, I've been married 3 times, divorced 3 times. I've been with the same man now for 10 years. And what I've learned from all my relationships and being single and the everything I can pinpoint to is the ego in itself. So I just want to ask you, is that what you mean by surrendering, where you just let down your ego and just be thankful for everything you have instead of feeling entitled for everything that you have?
Well, you know, there's probably a lot of different ways to phrase it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a couple of things. One is that, I think with ego, we're very much about trying to defend and be right. And with surrendering, I do talk quite a bit about approaching someone with vulnerability. Because when we are all together, when we are calm, cool, and collected and on top of our game, that is actually not when we're having the best opportunities for intimacy. The best opportunities for intimacy are when you are a mess. You know, it's like if I tell you guys about the time I went to go meet a reporter and I had pantyhose stuck up the leg of my pants and it came out during the interview, that does not make me look so, fantastic and together. But in a way, it presents an opportunity for bonding because it makes me human. It's a vulnerability. There's a something that we all identify with. So I do talk quite a bit about taking a vulnerable approach. So the way that looks with a man is that instead of maybe trying to impress him, like on a first date, you know, I know for me, like I'm a great talker. And when I'm nervous, I talk even more. And on a first date, I was just, you know, I'd be like talking away. And then I would say something that, you know, was a little embarrassing. I'd say, oh, not that I'm this, and I go too far, and then I would have a hangover the next day thinking, why did I say that? So instead of trying to impress him and surrendering, we acknowledge, first of all, that we're only on this date because the guy asked us out, because a surrendered woman doesn't pursue a man. She knows that she has a power to attract and the power to accept or reject men. So when she's on the date, she considers it his audition for the part of her boyfriend. He is applying for the job. She's already made the cut. He asked her out. So we give ourselves the gift of being able to be quiet on a first date so that we can ask ourselves questions like, how do I feel? What do I want? We can also listen carefully to what he's telling us about himself, because a big, important part of your job on a first date is to judge his character. Is this a man who's what I call a good guy? Is he telling me that he, with either his words or his actions, is he telling me that he's maybe not capable of being faithful? In which case, you kick him to the curb. Is he telling me, with his words or his actions, that he's addicted to drugs, alcohol, or gambling? Because those are guys that are definite heartbreaks. Am I getting some sense that this guy might be physically abusive? You know, those are ones where you excuse yourself and go to the restroom and just keep going. Or do whatever you have to do to get out of those relationships, because we cannot expect to have intimacy, passion, and peace with men who don't have good character. You do have to have a good guy. The good news is, those are the only 3 guys you have to worry about. You do not have to look out for passive-aggressive, ADD, or, you know, a lot of these other things that we've been taught to be vigilant about. Turns out it just doesn't matter.
Well, and I was reading that section last night, and it was a real eye-opener, because one of my ex-boyfriends was all 3 of them. And I was like, oh, my God, he read his entire MO right there. And, of course, that ended. But I think I saw a lot of myself in one, some of those cases where, especially in that relationship, where I just, for some reason, did not get the red flag right away. And you do give us great examples of what red flags to watch out for.
Yeah, and that really is critical. I mean, I do, unfortunately, because I work with wives, you know, we've been able to see time and time again that every time a wife changes her behavior, as long as she's got a good guy, she changes herself, he responds to her differently. Because it turns out that every good guy on the planet with a wife or a girlfriend really, really wants her to be happy. I've asked thousands of men this question. I'll say, well, how important is it to you that your wife is happy or your girlfriend is happy? And they all say the same thing. Some variation of like, oh, it's very important, or it's everything. Or I had a guy from the UK tell me it's imperative. It's imperative that she's happy. Aww. So it's universal. And then, you know, I get letters from women in Egypt, and they say, oh, we just thought that just Egyptian men were this way, but, you know, or we just thought Japanese men were this way. No, this is a universal trait. So as a feminist, I'm a feminist, and, you know, I support more women having more choices. But I do think it's really important to acknowledge that we are feminine, as well as saying that we want to be successful in the workplace. We want to have it all, which means that we also want to have great romances. And that means acknowledging that men and women are different, that we want different things, that we think differently, that we like different movies, we wear different shoes, we even like different foods. There are just many, many biological, certainly cultural differences. And this is a big part of surrendering too, is just acknowledging those differences and playing to our strengths. You know, what does it mean to be feminine? To be feminine is to allow a man who wants to please you to do so, so that you are receptive. We talk a lot about receiving. It's a very feminine quality. So it's when someone gives you a compliment, instead of saying, oh, this dress, oh, I got it on sale, you just say, thank you, and nothing more. You allow the compliment to land. You swallow it down. You take it in and allow it to make you feel good and possibly a little uncomfortable. Sometimes it feels a little vulnerable.
Laura, why do you think, you know, and you're so right about this, because I have that problem. Why do you think women have that problem, that we can't accept compliments without having excuses for it?
Well, you know, I think it's probably not, it's definitely not uncommon. A lot of women do have that, although now that I'm more aware of it, I will watch, I was looking at Kat Deely the other day. She's the host of So You Think You Can Dance, and she's absolutely gorgeous, and she was nominated for an Emmy, and everyone was congratulating her, and Kat had beautiful receiving skills. She was like, thank you, you know, you could tell she was feeling, you know, she was shrugging her shoulders, looking a little bit vulnerable, but she was taking in those compliments. So it's interesting that some people have developed that skill. Some of us are not so comfortable. I think we probably learned in junior high that we should probably adopt kind of a false modesty, right? We didn't want anyone to think that we thought we were hot stuff, so because that wouldn't be cool in junior high. So we sort of developed this policy of deflecting not just compliments, but also gifts. You know, we say, oh, you didn't have to buy me anything, or, oh, you shouldn't have done that. Help, you know, can I help you carry that? No, I got it. You know, do you need, you want me to move that chair for you? No, I can do it. And maybe that was also partly us saying, hey, we can be independent. You know, we need to be independent, right, as part of this late 60s and 70s social revolution where women were trying to get their rights at the workplace. I think maybe that was part of the problem. I know Marianne Williamson wrote this piece that I just loved. It's called Feminine 2.0. And in it, she talks about how in our race towards feminism, we started to denigrate the feminine. And we not only said that there was no difference between men and women, that being a woman was actually kind of negative. We were like, we can all be good men. So we were free to now have the same life as men instead of enjoying and honoring our own unique gifts as women.
Well, then you mentioned something about, you know, the difference between modesty and humility, and that if you can accept these gifts and these compliments and still be humble
and grateful. You know, yeah. And I agree with that. Because the false modesty is not genuine.
And that's right.
If somebody gives you a compliment, they just say thank you. You know, what's the big deal? You don't have to put yourself down, because that's only going to reinforce, your own self-esteem.
That's right. And what's kind of fun about this, you know, you could consider this an exercise, you know, both of you, Maria and Tanya, and for the listeners too, to think about, like, over the next 24 hours, every time you get a compliment, to try just maybe taking even a little bit of a pause after someone says, wow, cute shoes. You can just pause for a moment, let it sink in, and then just say, thank you. And then try, to the best of your ability, not to say anything more. Because even if we're not putting ourselves down, even if you're saying, oh, I got these at Macy's, or whatever it is you're saying, you're still trying to deflect a little bit. We're still trying to take the attention off of ourselves, because it does feel a little bit uncomfortable. And if you just sort of notice, if you just ask yourself, well, how do I feel after you receive a compliment? Typically you'll say, you know, women will say, well, that felt good. Or, gosh, that felt uncomfortable. But usually it's both. It feels good and uncomfortable. So if you can just notice that, practice that, memorize that feeling, that's a super important skill in intimacy, in romance. Because men, I mean, I think it's like the Cars said it best, I think. They said, you're just what I needed. I needed someone to please. And men need someone to please. And if we're not pleasable, that's not very satisfying for them. And that's something that applies in every aspect. I mean, you can certainly apply it to the bedroom, but it's absolutely a part of everyday life. You know, he wants to be able to, even the little things, opening the door for her, like my husband will bring me a glass of water in the middle of the night when I'm thirsty, because neither of us really wants to get out of bed, but he wants to make me happy. And I want to be made happy. I want to be cherished. So he gets up and gets me a glass of water, and I drink it and thank him. And we're both happy.
Wow.
And I want to go back to what you were saying about the first date, because I think that's important for our listeners, that we feel like we have to fill in all of the pauses with chatter, nervous chatter. And you're right about, like, let him be. If he's going to be an asshole, and I'm sorry, just let him be one, so that you know who he really is, and you see his two colors right away, and not try to control the situation. And I think that's the most valuable thing that you're teaching, is how are you ever going to get to know him if you don't let him be himself? And so I think in those first few dates, you know, you really are auditioning. And I know for me, when I was being, it just caused me so much anxiety. It's because I wanted to, you know, if you're going to call me, and you go through a little bit of those nervous things. And I know, you know, next time I start dating again, I'm going to really take these lessons to heart and just not worry about anything.
So, Maria, might take this that you are not dating presently, because I thought I was kind of there. I read your blog.
Well, I should sit in that. I'm thinking about it. I actually have been smiling at men more. I always smile.
Good job, Maria. Good job. No one's safe around me. You know that, right? There's always an agenda over here. I am an advocate for romance. So, and certainly someone like you, Maria, should be enjoying all the benefits of your birthright, which is to enjoy lifelong romance.
Yeah. I like that, your birthright. I like that.
But I'm now much more, I'm conscious of it, so I'm my mind is open to it. I just haven't joined a dating service yet, or that kind
right.
of, but,
right.
But I
but what you're what you're describing is really important. You've had a shift, and it is significant. And what I find is that this goes back to the idea that we're all kind of walking around with neon signs over our heads as women, because men are a 24/7 noticing service. No matter where we are in the world, men will always notice us because we are women. That's all it takes. So the neon sign either says, leave me alone, or it says, I'm open. right? So the shift you're describing is that as you're walking around in the world, your neon sign now has changed. And it's obviously not as blatant as that, but there is something to it, because I notice as women go through my workshop, they'll post on Match, and if their energy isn't there, they're just not getting the responses. And then they sort of shift. They become so that they're doing the things you're talking about. They're smiling. They become aware of wanting to honor their desire to be cherished, to be married. And then all of a sudden men are coming out of the woodwork. They're getting all kinds of hits on Match. You know, the guy on the bus notices them. The guy at work that sits five cubicles down that rarely speaks comes over and chats her up. They just appear everywhere. So much of it is about our energy. So I just want to point out, I think it's really significant what you're doing with your shift.
Yeah, and it hasn't been that long since I spoke to you. So I think that I'm making good progress,
I think so, too. I think so, too.
And I'm traveling a lot this month, and I'm not probably inclined to start as, paying service now because I'm not even going to be here. So, but I'm definitely heading in that direction. And like I said, I've been smiling a lot more. Like yesterday, when I went to yoga class, there was an older gentleman on the stairwell, and he was clearly waiting. He was giving me room to pass. He was being courteous before he came down. And he had a big smile on his face, so I smiled back at him. I said, hello, thank you. And I walked upstairs. And on my birthday party on Sunday, some guy just saw me, and he was just like, oh my God, your eyes are so beautiful. And of course, he turned out to be a creep, though, but I wasn't even trying. I was just, beaming, I guess. I was happy, and he noticed it. And
That's exactly. So you are showing up in a feminine way, men are noticing that, and you both get to enjoy that little bit of electricity between the two of you in that moment. And that's a great feeling. So I'm curious about the creep. What's your definition of a creep? What made this guy a creep?
Well, he was really, really pushy. I mean, within 2 minutes, he was inviting me over to his apartment whenever I wanted. And then he sat down with us, and after a couple of hours, he lost his phone. And then he, kicked the table. He would kick a chair down, and he got violent. So end of story.
yeah, that's a creep. Okay, good. All right. Just checking, because I do find sometimes, I had a client recently who went on a date, and he just wasn't her guy, She was like, instead of taking me to the restaurant part, we wanted to go into the bar, and then he was watching the TV over my shoulder, and, what a creep. And the same guy had also, come to pick her up. He says that she was so beautiful. He paid the tab. It's like, that is not a creep. That's just a guy who's not right for you. But I find that that's a kind of a common defense for some of my single women, is that they're making a regular guy into a creep, because then if they make him wrong, then they feel a little bit safer. But the truth is, it's not serving you to do that. But in your case, Maria, you're right. That guy was a creep. Kicking the table, kicking the chair over, that's a bad sign. So I was just kind of checking for that. But anyway,
yeah.
Interesting to note.
So in your book, you advocate that women wait for men to ask them out. But you do give some tips on how to give them hints.
Yes.
If you like the guy. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So this goes back to the principle of receptivity, to the art, the fine feminine art of receiving. And that is to say that we found that asking men out on dates, it just doesn't work for a couple of reasons. So one is, since men are feminine, are attracted to the feminine body and spirit, when you are approaching a man to ask him on a date, by definition, you are folding your tail feathers down and approaching him with probably the least attractive posture that you can have, because you, by definition, you can't receive something when your hands are full of something you're trying to offer. So we wait for him to approach us. So much better for your self-esteem, because women will try asking men out, and then, of course, he's not interested, and they don't know exactly why, but they get dejected and feeling like you know, nobody loves me, no one ever will. And it's just kind of this re-injury, so I'm just not an advocate. You know, I just don't recommend it. And men will tell you, if you ask them, they say, oh, I love it when a chick asks me out. That's great, but they're lying. Don't believe. I mean, they do like it because it's flattering, it's good for their egos, but do they like her? No, they don't, and they don't know that. So you can't really go by what they're saying in that regard.
They would have asked her out in the first place if they liked
her. Yeah, they would have asked her out, exactly, if they were interested. And the other problem with that is some men aren't available. So you're really just taking a very high risk. It's really like a Vegas-style gamble to ask a man out, because even men who do ask you out, or let's say a guy that you run into on Match, I mean, there's just a myriad. I like to joke about how, you know, some men must disappear into, like, the witness protection program, or there's all those alien abductions. You know, we just can't really dwell on why certain men aren't pursuing us. But it does help to have several men pursuing you at once. So here are the things, getting back to your question about how you give them hints. It's about being receptive. So you might, for instance, you might, if you were interested in a guy asking you out, you could ask him to ask you out. One way to do that would be to hand him your card and say, oh, I've really enjoyed meeting you. Here's my number in case you want to get together. So you're letting him know that if he asks you out, he's not going to get rejected. But you're not saying, hey, if you want to get together, Thursday at 6 o'clock is a good time for me. There's a world of difference there. It's subtle.
That's true.
But it's pretty significant when it comes to using your power to create lasting love. Another way to be receptive is the smiling exercise, like Maria was talking about, just smiling at everyone you see. If you hold a man's gaze and smile at him, that's a fantastic indication to him that you would be receptive to his advances. I actually had one client doing this exercise once, and I loved the story. She's going around smiling at everyone. She's trying to make herself open. She's at a bookstore. She smiles at a guy. He smiles back, and then he starts to approach her. So she panics. She's like, oh, my God, he's coming towards me. So she finds a book quickly, buries her nose into it, and sort of hides it to the bookstand. And, of course, he doesn't say anything to her, because what man would? She didn't stay receptive. She made the initial contact and then gave in to her fear, which is, you know, it's human.
Yeah, and that happened. Something similar happened to a friend of mine the other day, and I think I'm going to have her read your book, because she was at a CVS or Walgreens or something, and some guy came up, talked to her, and he wasn't creepy or anything, and she's like, oh my God, I think he likes me. But I just ran out the store. I was so afraid. I blew it. And so I need to pass this book on to her.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of attracting the man who's right for you is about just having courage, finding the courage to stand still long enough at the end of the date to get kissed instead of bounding up 5 flights of stairs and 2 jumps. But it's also about minimizing your risk. I think what I've tried to do here in this book is give you tools and techniques that are going to make you more successful. So first of all, you're not asking men out, so you're not taking that risk of disappointment. You know, another technique, another tool is about honoring that when we as women are sexual, that's going to release a bonding chemical. And that bonding chemical, it's the same one, it's oxytocin. It's the same one that we release when we have a baby. So if you think about how incredibly crazy, happy, and bonded to your baby women are, that's the same chemical. We release thousands of times more of it than men do when we're sexual. So one of the things I highly recommend, and it's not always so easy to do, but it really is pretty important for your safety, is to not engage sexually unless you're in an exclusive relationship. Otherwise, you're taking enormous risk that your body is going to try to take over. It's going to try to make it work. This guy has got to be it, because we were sexual.
Yeah, you become addicted to oxytocin. I actually have. I am the pro person about oxytocin, Laura. I talk about it all the time.
Oh,
actually. Yeah.
Okay. You know, he's the hormone queen.
I love oxytocin.
Well, tell us, teach me a little bit about oxytocin.
Well, oxytocin is a hormone that we all release. So women release when they give birth. But the problem with a lot of women is that we release it when we have orgasm. But with us is that we become addicted to it. So when you're stuck with a loser because you think he's so great because the sex was so great because you figured that's all you can get, really it's not you. It's your body's addicted to it. So you just got to realize that. So that's why it comes into play that you shouldn't have sex right away if you really want to have a relationship. But if you want to just go out there and have fun and just, you know, and you don't feel great about what's going on in your life and you just want to have some self-destructive, you know, a lot of women do that. They go out and that's where they, you know, they think they feel powerful because it's the oxytocin, but really it's just a destructive way of using it. Does that make sense? It's like, I talk about oxytocin a lot, and a lot of the anti-aging doctors are, they're touting the oxytocin hormone as the, that you can get it now. So they're looking at that as researching that as the next Viagra for women, because really it's, but they have to realize something. Oxytocin is based on trust. You don't secrete that much oxytocin unless you feel really trusting somebody.
Right. Well, so, getting naked is sort of an indication of trust.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is reminds me that Dr. Oz recommends that for best health that you have, I want to say it's over 200 orgasms a year. He's basically saying for optimum health, the more you orgasm, the better. So, and I'm right behind him there saying, yeah, let's have more orgasms. Because I'm, you know, as a romance advocate, that's certainly an important part of a great relationship. If you are not making love, that's not really a romance, is it? That's maybe your roommates or your co-parents or your something else, but you're not really lovers if you're not having orgasms together. So, anti-aging, it's got a Viagra effect, this oxytocin, but orgasms are important. If you're not having them, it's certainly a worthy goal. But as a single woman, it's certainly a need that you have, but I think that putting the structure of a committed relationship, an exclusive relationship around it, is definitely the way to go so that you're not taking unnecessary risk with your heart.
But really,
and I think also, obviously, you know, orgasm is very important, and not one that you give yourself, but from your partner, obviously. But also being touched, you know, that's the one thing that I... Because my life is full in many ways, you know, I have great friends and family, and I never a dull moment with me. But at the end of the day, it's like really being hugged by someone who adores you, or just holding a hand. You know, there's a physical bonding there. I don't know if that releases oxytocin.
Yes.
But you always feel so grounded, and, you know, when you're close to someone like that, in addition to that, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that that's what I miss the most, but having that with supreme trust, you know, the best relationships I've been in are the ones that caused me, you know, anxiety, where I just trusted this man implicitly, and I can relax and be me and receive, and being held, or touched, just that alone, you know, I think it's worth the risk and the vulnerability and all of that. Well, the other thing, I was hanging out with the monkeys and they were jumping all over me, you know, because I don't even have a dog. I'm a bird, you know, so I can't even pet a dog, or just being around a warm-blooded mammal and playing, you know, there was something very grounding about that.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have children, like I do, and you don't have a lover, I mean, I definitely feel that something missing in that physical aspect of my life, that no yoga can replace, no, you know, masturbatory experience can replace, no, you know, I mean, if you could go dancing, for example, and be close to somebody, but that's a different type of relationship, you know, it's not sexual, and it's still physical, but it's not your lover, it's your dance partner. So, I totally think that, you know, if you, I mean, one of the questions you sent me was, like, a lot of women are happy being single. What do you say to those women? I would say that to them, that just something missing. So you're happy and they're
being
respect.
Yeah.
It's important.
Listen, you know, for me, I just can't imagine. There's such a fortifying effect in my life of having, you know, I've been married for 22 years, and every day, he tells me I'm beautiful. He makes up little songs about me and sings them around the house. And, you know, we hold hands and, yeah, we have a good sex life. It's definitely an important aspect of it. I mean, there's just so much. To me, fortification is the best word. When I am stuck on something in my business, I call him the oracle. I go and ask the oracle what to do, and he's such a smart man. You know, he's always got great suggestions about how to handle things. So I can't imagine not having someone who's always got my back like that around. So there definitely is a, you know, for me, gosh, it seems like it would be a huge hole in my life. But you know what's interesting is I'll hold a workshop for singles, and so they pay money to come to my workshop. And usually around about the second week, one of them will say to me, well, you know, I've decided I'm really happy being single and that works for me. And I just, you know, I love seeing that because I always have to laugh to myself. Like, really, you paid money to come to my workshop and you took your time to come here because to tell me that you're happy being single? And I think what absolutely comes up is just this terror that there is going to be some risk. You know, I wish I could say there's no risk to getting into a romance, but it just wouldn't be true. You know, I mean, I'm taking a risk. Even now, my husband could be hit by a truck today, and I would lose him and be devastated. So forming an attachment is definitely risky. And I think when you come face-to-face with that, it's very tempting to just say, you know, forget the whole thing. I think I will suffer the low-grade pain of loneliness instead of the potential to get my heart smashed. But I guess, you know, so it's helpful to have ongoing encouragement and support that you are actually headed towards something better, something you need, something you crave, something you desire, something that's your birthright, because it sure is easy to get fearful again.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't really feel lonely, but I acknowledge that aspect of my life is missing. And I think that's a good place to come from because I'm not needy or desperate. I just would like to complement my life with a good man.
Right.
And have all those physical pleasures. And one of the things that you talk about in the book as well that I was kind of taking for granted was that I said, okay, who do I, because you talk about, well, seek out women mentors. Look at the women you know who are happy in their relationships and talk to them. And then I started to think, okay, I know Tanya and Scotty. They may not be married, but, you know, they've been together a long time. I know they make it work. And my sister and her husband have been married for about, oh, I don't know, 30 years. My sister's a lot older than I am. And my other friend is also not married, but she's in a solid long-term relationship. They've both been married before, and they decided not to get married. And, in fact, someone else who read my blog post emailed me, and she said, you know, she actually studied your track, and she said she finally found the guy, and she wanted to sit down with me and mentor me and talk to me, you know. So once I kind of started to think about it, you know what, I do know a lot of people who are in good relationships. This is something that I took for granted before. I mean, wouldn't even say to ask. And also telling people, hey, I'm in the market, hook me up.
Yeah, hook me up. And what a great offer from your friend to mentor you because, it's, you know, it's obviously...
She volunteered it.
It's a benefit to her, too. There's benefit to her because, I mean, they say if you want to learn something, teach it, right? If you really want to learn something, teach it because you get it at a level that's a little bit different. There's more accountability. I mean, when I am driving down the road with my husband and I want to tell him the best route to take or where to turn or something from my old controlling behavior, which still comes up from time to time, you know, I might say something, but I'm aware, gosh, there's like, you know, hundreds of thousands of women that I'm telling not to do this, and then here I am being a hypocrite right now. Gosh, I guess I better clean this up right now. And that, in turn, helps improve my intimacy because I've got some expectations for myself beyond just myself. So I do think the mentoring offer is tremendous.
Yeah, and I'm going to be a little more, when I meet these women, and, you know, when we go out, like, with the girls, I'm going to be more conscious of asking them, hey, so how do you make this work? You know, tell me what works for you, and how do you, you know, one of the things, well, as a writer, I always ask people, how did you meet? Because I love those stories, you know.
Yeah, I love
those romance stories. and especially in the good relationships. Oh, yeah, another friend of mine, living back to Miami, has a beautiful romance story, and she and I both went through the whole South Beach thing together and dated a bunch of jerks, and, you know, and she eventually met the one, and her story is beautiful, and she's another example of someone who kind of was close to me, actually, and she got married, and they had a beautiful child, and so that felt good for me to become more aware of the good examples around me. It gives me hope.
Yeah.
I took it for granted before, and I like that point that you made, that, you know, seek out and talk to women who have made it work in your own circle.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was most terrifying for me when I was struggling in my marriage was I was just asking everybody. I wasn't just asking women who had, you know, happy marriages or long marriages. I was just asking everybody. And so you talk to somebody who's just newly divorced, and she'll say, yeah, well, people grow apart, or you might have picked the wrong guy. You were too young when you got married. I mean, they are full of negativity and misinformation. So it really was helpful for me to realize, like, I can only get good information from people who have what I want. It's like I couldn't get information about how to get in shape from somebody who's obese and sedentary. You know, you wouldn't even think to ask them. But yet somehow with our girlfriends, I think we really take to heart what some of them say who don't actually enjoy the thing that we're wanting.
Yeah, but doesn't women like miserable?
I've recently lost a lot of weight, and I think that's helped kind of make me feel sexier again. But
congratulations.
Thank you.
And she looks great. You look great, Maria.
But this idea, I mean, I think one of the things that make women hesitate to go on an online service is because, well, I'm too fat, I'm not good enough, you know. Like, we need to shut up, right, and just go out there.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's a lot of emphasis, because I have a friend who's just looks like, you know, an elite athlete who still thinks that she's fat. You know, I mean, we all have those voices, and it's like, when exactly are you going to be good enough to be loved? You know, it's right now. It's right this second. Of course you're good enough to be loved. Of course, that was your right when you were born as a female to be cherished by a man. You know, is there somebody out there that's going to love you just the way that you are, that you are also going to think is absolutely amazing and wonderful? Absolutely. And if you don't believe it, especially with the weight thing, you know, I took a lot of comfort from watching The Biggest Loser. I don't know if you guys have ever watched that show, but there are so many couples where, you know, both of them are really heavy, or they meet on the show and they're both really heavy and then they get married, or, you know, so it doesn't, that has no bearing on anything. It's just another smokescreen that we throw up so that we won't have to risk our hearts.
You know, here in Miami, Laura, I mean, this can be a very vain city. You know, I think we're the second largest capital of plastic surgery, and you go out to South Beach or something, and everybody looks quote unquote perfect. And that's been for me, you know, growing up here, like kind of a boot camp of self-esteem, because I have to just be very confident and know that I'm beautiful the way I am, even if I don't look like a model, you know, and to appreciate my own quality. And I think it just makes it a little more challenging here for single women to get out of that mindset and stop comparing themselves to other women and just be as beautiful as you can be today.
Yeah.
And not let that deter you, because I've fallen into that trap many times. But, like, in the last, you know, year or so, I worked my way out of that hole. I said, that's it. You know, I'm just going to keep telling myself, well, you can't meet somebody because you're fat. Because that's not true.
Right.
You can't meet anyone because you're afraid.
True at all.
Right, exactly. That's really good honesty right there. That's really good honesty with yourself. It's more about the fear than anything else.
Yeah.
And Laura, I find, like, it's the people I surround myself with too, because I go through changes in my life, and I've gone through a lot of it, and I've realized as I went along that it's not that I don't like people who are negative. I just prefer not to be around people who are negative. Like, I just prefer to be around people who just, even if they have nothing to show, they love life and everything's great. You know, I just prefer that. And I think that's just a way of thinking, but it's actually a lot of people nowadays don't like that. They think you're too positive or you're too happy. What is wrong with our society? Do you find it's because we find that's not acceptable, or because I just don't like being around unhappy people. So I try to make them happy.
I'm totally with you, and it's true that sometimes people consider optimism. I think, you know, everybody's got a different comfort zone, and if you grew up with a lot of cynicism and maybe negativity, then it just feels foreign to be around. You know, one of my friends accused me of being relentlessly optimistic, and that it's absolutely true. I am relentlessly optimistic, and that's my nature. But she does find it annoying at times that I, you know, when she's trying to complain, I'm saying, well, but look at the bright side, or, oh, yeah. You know, that's good news because now you can. So, but, you know, I think there will always be, there has always been that balance of positive and negative all around the world. And there's a lot to be said when you're dating to keeping those positive voices around you. You really do need that ongoing support to help you stay brave.
And we have about 10 more minutes, but speaking of staying positive and seeing the glass half full, in the book you speak of, you know, okay, so what if the guy has a little irritating habit? You know, do you break up with him because of that? Like, tell us a little bit more about, you know, there's the bad guys, one, you know, the alcoholic, the, you know, the abuser, and the, what was the other one?
Well, a guy who's actively addicted to drugs, drugs, gambling, or alcohol. Just those three, by the way. A lot of women will try to throw in, oh, he's addicted to food or he's addicted to cigarettes. And I'm like, so what? That is not one of the criteria that we have seen is a deal breaker in marriage. So I remember a friend of mine recently saying, oh, my sister's going to get divorced. And I kind of flippantly said, why? Does he slurp his cereal? Because as women, first of all, we initiate the vast majority of divorce. It's as high as 91% of all divorces initiated by women. And I think there's a good reason for that. One is we are emotional creatures. We're more emotional than men. And we are hormonal. You know, every month we're hormonal. When we're pregnant, we're hormonal. And when we're menopausal, we're hormonal. And we're, you know, perimenopausal, we're hormonal. So you add, those are always evaluating things. And we're always saying, what has he done for me lately? And why am I so unhappy? And why are my thighs running together? And I do everything around here. So if you add a few nights of sleep deprivation to all these hormones and the emotional nature of women, you have someone who's going down to file for divorce instead of maybe looking at what is her part. And a big piece of her part, and a big part of what I advocate women pay more attention to, is not taking care of her own happiness. So it's kind of ironic in a way, you know, when your marriage is unhappy, your relationship is unhappy with your boyfriend, the very first thing I say is, well, how is your self-care? Are you doing at least three things a day for your own pleasure? Just because you enjoy them. That's the only reason. So that might be, it could be watching your favorite TV show. It could be reading a book. It could be going for a walk. It could be lunch with a friend. It could be talking to your sister on the phone for hours. It could definitely be a mani-pedi. It can be a hot bath. It could be a massage, but it doesn't have to be. It could be playing with your pets. You know, it could be taking a nap. It could be sleeping in. It's whatever makes you feel joy and pleasure. So without doing that, we can't possibly hope to be happy in our relationships, because we just aren't going to be happy, period. It takes a little bit of energy to devote to ourselves and our self-care. So one of the things I have women do is put it in their calendar. They schedule three things a day, just like you'd schedule a work meeting or the dentist. It's in there. It's in the calendar. So, oh, it's, you know, it's 5:30. It's time for me to gab on the phone. It's time for me to take my walk, if that's pleasurable for you. If that just feels like, I know for a lot of people, exercise feels like they've got to do it because it's part of how you keep in shape. So they've got a negative affiliation with exercise instead of a positive association with it. But whatever it is that makes you feel good, those have to be the priority before you can actually have an amazing, magical, passionate, peaceful relationship.
That is so true.
So it's important as a single woman to be doing that for yourself.
Absolutely.
To prepare. And then, but what if you meet a guy who's perfect in any other way, but he slurps the cereal? Do you give up on him? Because I think a lot of us, and I've been guilty of this myself, that I'm running away, you know. And the guy was probably not an abuser, you know, wasn't kicking down chairs. And I didn't give him a chance.
That's right. So. That's right. I think that's really common. So you make a good point. So, I mean, I think some of the tools of surrendering will definitely help you keep from having your running shoes on. I always talk about, this was true for me, you know, I kind of had my running shoes on too, right? I was ready to divorce my husband because, I don't know, he left his socks on the floor, right? So that was a pretty little thing. But so some of the tools of surrendering, like the being receptive, letting him please you, doing the self-care, it does help you stay out of unwarranted fear about things that he does that may start to bug you. And I will say too, there's a part of romance in the very beginning when everybody goes insane and loses their mind and thinks the other person is perfect and magical. And it's an absolutely necessary part of romance, because without that, you would start to notice, like, oh, I think he's got bad breath, or gosh, he's balding, or whatever it is. Whereas when you're in that altered state, that euphoric state at the beginning of a romance, that's the time that you form a bond. So that goes a long way towards helping you overlook some of these little habits, like you're saying. But I think another litmus test for me is, gosh, did you choose to marry this guy? So whenever I've got a wife, you know, I can remind her, look, you didn't choose to marry him because you thought he was stupid or incompetent, or, you know, there were things that you found really compelling about him in the beginning, and let's try to remember what those were. Same thing is true with a long-term boyfriend, like you have, Tanya, but it can be a little trickier when you're first establishing a new relationship, like you're talking about. So that's a great time to get feedback from those girlfriends who do have the kind of relationship that you want to have. Ask their opinion. He's slurping his cereal. Don't you think I should break up with him? And the girlfriend who's got what you want can quickly and easily support you by saying, no, that's not a big deal. I wouldn't worry about that.
That is so
true. And just real quick, you say in the book, you should know that by 6 months, that's a good amount of time if you've been dating somebody.
Yeah.
Whether you want to come forward or feel like you should both more or less know you want to be in the long term at that point.
Right. But especially if you're wanting to honor your desire to be married, 6 months is just all you need. I think there's a huge mythology in our society currently that says you should date for a year or two or five or 10 first to really get to know each other. And that comes from people not realizing what the source of success in relationships is, which is the feminine person in the relationship having the right tools to create an intimate, passionate, peaceful relationship.
Well, what if you just like being the way it is? I like
it. Sorry, say again?
I like what, like, I have, I've been with a guy, it would be 11 years, April Fool's Day, actually, next year. And we spend our time, we talk every day, but we see each other exclusive, like, on the weekend, like, from Friday night till Sunday night. And I do my thing, he does his thing, but we share everything. I have my own place, and I like it. I just don't want to, like, I don't want to co-mingle my stuff with his stuff. I think because I'm 44, and I'm 8 years older than he is, and I just find that I've reached a point in my life, I really like what I have, and he's already taking care of me. He takes really good care of me. I get 100 roses every week, and that's been going on for 10 years, so it's kind of,
wow.
For me, I like what I have. I don't feel the need to get married.
Well, Scotty he goes out of his way to please you all the time, doesn't he? I mean, he's
yeah.
very generous with you.
Yeah, he's very.
I see him around you. It's all about you, Tanya.
And when same with he and I, because I've never really, from the time we started dating, I never put him down, never anything. If he did do something that bothered me, I wouldn't, I wouldn't really say anything, actually. I just kind of like, it's such a silly thing to even get irritated. And I reevaluate myself as far as, why am I irritated? Did I get enough sleep? Did I eat anything? Why am I, you know, is it that time of month? So I always reevaluate what, if he irritates me about certain things. But most of all, I guess maybe we were friends before we started dating, but in the last 10 years, our passion's still there. We argue when we do argue. But we just, yeah, I just don't want to get married. I don't want to, like, you know, co-mingle. And he wants
right.
to, I don't.
You know, if it's not broken, I don't think yeah. you need to fix it. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, some women, you know, to me, again, it's just about, like, are you coming from fear or are you coming from love? You know, Marianne Williamson taught us those are opposites. So, if you're saying, you know, oh, gosh, I'd like to get married, but I'm afraid because I've been divorced, and that was really painful and awful, then that's a different story. But that's not what I'm hearing, Tanya. I hear you saying, gosh, this is really working for us. I'm really happy, and so is he. So great.
Yeah,
good on you.
We're very blessed. We're very thankful about it because I always think about it. We've broken up for like 3 months, where that was like 4.5 years ago. I think we were reaching our 7-year mark, and we're getting that itch. And so, but we went out, we did our thing, and we got back together, and we respect each other more. And it's, at the end of the day, it's just, it's the person that who I need to spend time with and who I tell everything. He's my best friend, too. And I think a lot of time, as women, we want to be the caretaker, the mom, the everything, but we don't let someone else take care of us. And Scotty, he's the one man of all the men I've ever been with. He takes care of me in every way. And I think that's where I really enjoyed chatting with you, because you really bring it back. It's great. Yeah, I'm a feminist too, but you're teaching us, telling us, be a lady, be a woman, be treated like a lady, make yourself feel special, because we are special.
And that's right.
That's what I love about
your
book.
That's right. Yep, absolutely.
Well, and I think also if you haven't seen examples of courtship in your life, you know, that it's important, you know, because we are talking about courtship 101, you know, and I think a lot of, and with the way that times have changed, women are now wearing the pants more, and they were never trained on how to be treated that way. And
that's right.
And then men get used to it, and it's like a vicious cycle. It's a negative pattern that's reinforced. When I go out with a guy, if he invited me, you know, if he's a friend, we might go Dutch or whatever, but if it's a romantic thing, no, he better pay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even pull out my wallet.
Right, that's right. Yeah, you
and
can refill it
providing.
If he
hands the bill over to me, then I know, oh, no, no, no.
Yeah.
This is not
that's right, that's right.
Well, you know, I realize something, Maria, too. You're so right, but courtship is so important, because out of all the relationship, what just brought me back is when the first date I went on with Scotty, and I agreed to go out with him, that I said, I want to be courted, because I have never been courted correctly. I have rushed into marriages. I met someone, liked them within a month, got married. I mean, I've done stuff that, like, you know, let me save this person's life, or let me get this person a job. And I want to be courted. And that's why I think that's where 10 and a half years ago, when I told Scotty, I want to be courted. I want you to take care of everything, that I don't, you know, this is the way it should be. And you know what? That makes sense. I think that's where our success has been, is being courted. He courted me. And
yeah,
Maria,
that's
my secret, actually. I didn't even realize it until you brought it up, Maria.
Yeah, and you know, Tanya, you're a very strong woman, and you're certainly capable of moving mountains on your own, and you have. So I think that maybe that was your part of learning how to become receptive.
Mm-hmm. I surrendered. And, that's what it was.
Yeah, showing up as a woman and him showing up as a man is a huge part of the success of the relationships that I see. Just honoring that we walk the planet as a woman, and that does make us special. As you say, Tanya, it's really terrific.
Thank you
but
so much,
But I have so
much,
enjoyed
Laura.
Talking with you guys. This has been really a stimulating conversation.
Yes,
so thank you
so much. And
thanks so much.
Yeah. Closing, so you're going to be speaking at the Women's Summit Conference on Friday, right?
That's right. I am going to be speaking on, it's called Risky Revelations, how taking a controversial stand on relationships and revealing the personal details of my relationship have really led me to success as a best-selling author and speaker and workshop leader. And we're planning our first retreat in the Miami area in June. So I'm super excited about that, June 22nd through 24th. And you can find out more information about that at lauradoyle.org. As in orgasm.
Oh, I love it. We all love the O's.
And if anyone wants to attend the Women's Success Summit, you can find more about that at, I think it's
WomenSuccessSummit.com. WomenSuccessSummit.com. It's got all the S's in there. Lots of S's.
It's 2 days of really great speakers. I'm going to be there speaking on Thursday afternoon.
And I just heard that it almost sold out. So if you want to get a ticket to it, you better get it quick. So.
Fantastic. Laura, again, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. It was great talking to you guys.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Wow, I'm so impressed with her. Maria, that was great, wasn't it? She is so, you know, even her tone and everything, she's just very together.
A lot of food for thought, Tanya.
Yes, a lot of food for thought. And you know, the last thought was when it dawned on me that what I'd say to Scotty 10.5 years ago was, I want to be courted.
Well, and, you were part of the Laura Doyle programming without even knowing it.
Yeah, and that's where why I've had such a long... This is... if you put all my husbands together, all my boyfriends together that I've dated, I wouldn't have lasted 10.5 years. Isn't that scary? So again, Maria, what a great show. So I'm going to upload this and make a link for it. But everybody have a great day, and I'll be back tomorrow with Social Chats No Aging with my co-host, Sandra Lopez. And Maria, I'll chat with you later.
All right, you have a great week, Tanya.
You too, bye-bye. Oh, bye-bye. Yeah, by the way, happy early birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Bye.
All right.